a first-time guest, someone I'm honored to have on. I've been following his career for many years, and even in the last few weeks, I discovered he had a website where he's been writing some great articles. So how ironic this morning when our mutual friend contacted me about having him on our broadcast. The timing, I thought, is very interesting because, again, I just discovered he's got a website where he's been writing some great pieces. And I thought to myself last week, I should reach out, get him on. Well, a mutual friend already took care of that and texted me this morning. He says, would you like to have on Judge Andrew Napolitano? I said, absolutely, I'd like to have him on. I've been reading his website. He's got some great articles. So I guess it's meant to be. We're honored to have him with us for his first visit here on Lindell TV, and I hope the first of many. Judge Andrew Napolitano, welcome to Lindell TV, to Brandon House Live. Thank you for joining us tonight, sir.
Oh, thank you, Brandon. It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for that generous invitation. It is kind of strange that our mutual friend put us together today while we were each thinking about the other one.
Well, I was just on your website last week. I started reading your website, and then it was really interesting timing, but I'm glad she did. Well, let's get right into it. You've got a great website, and we put it under your name there, Judge Knapp, Judge N-A-P, obviously short, folks, for Judge Napolitano, judgenapp.com. You've got a great article here I want to get into on a republic of spies. That's a little teaser. But first, everybody's wanting to know, Judge, what do you make about the Supreme Court ruling today that the mandate of the vaccine for employees of 100 and more, people that have employees, 100 or more, they can't force the vax onto them. That's a victory, I think. But wait a minute. What about all the healthcare workers? I guess the ruling, if I read it correctly, involves hospitals or clinics that get government funding. They can force the COVID vaccine onto those healthcare workers. Am I reading that right, Judge?
Well, you are reading it right, Brandon. This is a typical John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts, split the baby in half. And the first opinion that came down, which basically said that no president, Joe Biden or any of them, can write the law, only Congress can write the law. So the president can't issue an edict saying to employers of 100 or more persons, you must have all of your employees vaccinated or have them tested, and we have the right to come on your property and look at the medical records of your employees. The Supreme Court, by a vote of 6-3, said, forget about it. There's no authority in the Constitution for that. Only Congress could write such legislation, and even if it did, it might be unconstitutional. But Mr. President, you didn't even ask Congress for this. You just did it on your own. That's the easy one. How I wish the court had been consistent and ruled the same way in the healthcare case. In that case, another edict by the president, this one through the Department of Health and Human Services, saying that all healthcare workers, from janitors in the building to surgeons in the operating room, of healthcare facilities that receive federal funds, Brandon, you and everybody watching us now knows that that's almost every healthcare facility in the country.
Exactly.
Since the feds have their fingers and their money everywhere. The Supreme Court, by a vote of 5-4, Justice Kavanaugh, being the swing vote that went over to the liberals, I was very disappointed in him, basically said, look, the purpose of this legislation is to help patients and to keep patients free. And that's part of the federal government's job under Medicare and Medicaid. So we're stuck with that. If you're in the healthcare industry and you want to work, you have to be vaccinated. There's now no way around it. Even though Congress never enacted that as a law, the president and his bureaucrats made it up. On the other hand, if you're employed by an employer that has 100 or more employees, and that employer said to you, the government is making me tell you to get vaccinated, that is no longer the case.
Mm. Well, I guess my concern, Judge, is that, and I am talking to people today, one of my friends worked and put his wife through nursing school. She got out. She's been practicing as a nurse for a few years now, several years. She likes her job. She helps special needs children who need 24-hour care. She loves her patients.
She's doing the work of the angels.
Absolutely. She loves her patients, these little children that require 24-hour care, many of them in the home of the parent. She loves her patients. She loves her job. She wants to care for these children. She wants to minister to these kids and their family members in their homes, as she does in this 24-hour care system that they have to have in the house. But I asked her husband, and I said, what's your wife going to do? He said, right. We discussed it a year ago, and as heartbreaking as it would be, we have decided we can't risk her health. She will have to quit. This is going to be tragic for many, many, many people. But think again about what the story I just told. Moms and dads that have special children that require 24-hour-a-day care, these nurses start to quit. The ripple effect it's going to have, not just at your local clinic and your hospital, but hospice, home care, this could be absolutely devastating. Untold numbers could die. But I also have to wonder, Judge, if this isn't being done, as we've been talking here, the great collapse is necessary for the great reset. We have the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, all these guys saying, you know, in the future, you'll own nothing and be happy. They're talking about a digital economy, a digital social credit scores. I mean, they spill their guts on their website. I mean, it's not conspiracy. And one has to wonder if this isn't part of the plan to have people walk off, collapse the system, and being able to further federalize things. I mean, I read the Communist Manifesto and been writing about communism for 30-some-odd years in my 14 books, and I read the Communist Manifesto and how they want to nationalize everything that moves, and I'm getting quite concerned. I think you would, if I'm correct, you come from more of a libertarian background, if I'm correct. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but if that's the case, you would join me in this concern, would you not?
Oh, I do come from a libertarian background. I am a serious libertarian who believes that the government should be questioned and challenged at every turn, who believes that the Constitution gives very limited authority to the federal government, but the courts have permitted the Congresses and the presidents to expand federal authority well beyond any reasonable reading of the Constitution. And there are members of the Supreme Court, Brandon, who agree with you and me. Justice Clarence Thomas wrote a brilliant and beautiful dissent on the health care case today and basically said, hey guys, to the majority, read the Constitution. Health, safety, welfare, and morality are left to the states, not to the federal government, so that you can, as Ronald Reagan famously said, vote with your feet. If you don't like the taxes in New Jersey, you can move to Pennsylvania. If you don't like the regulation in Massachusetts, you can move to New Hampshire. But the more regulation and control there is from DC, the less variety there is among the states and the less opportunity there is for people who reject the concept of big government, who believe that the Constitution means what it says, to find a place where they can be happy and flourish in freedom. If we have learned anything from the pandemic, it's not that the government hates the Constitution. We know that. It's not that the government will cut corners in the Constitution. We know that. It's that people, when they are afraid, will opt for the illusion of safety rather than the reality of liberty. Mm. That's heartbreaking.
And that is why a lot of people are using the term, you know, brainwashing that's gone on during this thing, you know, scaring people. I did a documentary on brainwashing that was put to bed in October of 2020, but with all the noise of the election, I didn't release it until February of 2021, and it's called Brainwashed America. It's just part one. It's 2 hours. Anyone can watch it for free at brainwashedthemovie.com. And in there, I showed the Tavistock Institute of the 40s talking about and studying military people, particularly POWs, putting POWs and watching how they were put through so much fear and anxiety and how the enemies could brainwash them after they had been put into such a high state of anxiety. And they said, how can we translate that over to the public and behavioral sciences? Judge, I have to wonder if a lot of this fear that you're talking about hasn't been used to get Americans to go where they would never otherwise go without this manufactured crisis and fear that gave them the confusion of misinformation, contradictory information, until they throw their hands up and say, I'll just follow the herd.
Look, every time there is a crisis, the government power expands. People allow it to expand because they believe the nonsense that the government will keep them safe and they'll still be free. The government doesn't keep you safe. You can keep yourself safe. But the government does take freedom away from you during these crises. And when the crisis is over, and at some point the American public will just learn to live with COVID the way we live with the common cold, the way we live with the flu every autumn. But when the crisis is over, these powers that the government has taken are still there. That Supreme Court opinion today that lets Joe Biden and all of his successors, no matter who it could be, it could be a well-intended conservative Republican libertarian, or it could be a maniacal progressive authoritarian, it could be anybody. That person now has this power that the Supreme Court ratified today to tell doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals, like your friend and his wife, how to do their job. And there's nothing, zero, in the Constitution about that as far as giving it to the federal government.
My guest, Judge Napolitano, his website, judgenap.com. I was going to go to your article on spies, the Republic of Spies, but let me go to this one first because we're in this vein of conversation. The terrifying lessons of COVID-19. You wrote this January 6th of this year. You've laid out some of them. Are there any other points that you make in this article you want to bring out to the public?
I appreciate that, Brennan. Thank you so much. The principal point is the one I just made, which is that when people are afraid, they will opt for the false safety rather than real liberty. And the government knows that. So what has terrified me the most is that people accepted this. Here in New Jersey, we have one of the more draconian governors in the country. He famously told my former colleague, Tucker Carlson, at Fox News, who said to him, how do all your regulations jive with the Bill of Rights, Governor Murphy? And Governor Murphy said, the Bill of Rights, that's above my pay grade. Above his pay grade, he took an oath to uphold the Constitution, which includes the Bill of Rights, at the very moment he became governor. What upsets me most is not that he did that. I expect him to do that. But that there were no repercussions, that the police enforced it, that the people accepted it, that the churches were closed, that the schools were closed, that the stores were closed, that the businesses were closed, not because the legislature of New Jersey made findings that it was absolutely necessary to close them to stay alive, but because some authoritarian left-wing Democratic governor named Phil Murphy decided that this was his ticket to re-election, and the public bought it.
Is this due to a lack of civics? Is it apathy? Is it lack of knowledge? What is it you think, Judge, from your experience, you studying history, you watching the culture, what has brought us to this point?
I guess it's fear, and the government knows that's the greatest weapon that they have, that they can control us with fear. I mean, if you watch Senator Rand Paul's cross-examination of Dr. Fauci, you can see the excesses, the exaggerations, the deceptions on the part of the government. And Dr. Fauci is just the tip of the iceberg. The government has honed this to a very fine art. This began 100 years ago when Republicans under Theodore Roosevelt and Democrats under Woodrow Wilson brought us World War I and the federal income tax and the popular election of senators, which undermined state sovereignty because senators used to be elected by state legislatures, the administrative state, the FDA, and all that gaggle of experts that would tell us how to live. And now all that stuff is taken for granted. And half the government stays the same, no matter who's elected president and who controls Congress. And in that half, which we sometimes call the deep state, that's where the power is. That's where the control is. And there's no transparency and there's no answering from that group to the American voter.
Here's another article, if you want to show the screenshot, guys. Another article by Judge Andrew Napolitano at judgenap.com. He wrote this one on January 13th of this year, A Republic of Spies. What's this article about, Judge?
This is about the CIA spying on Americans. And if you go back and look at the legislation that Harry Truman signed in 1947, when we transferred from a free country to a surveillance state, the legislation establishing the intelligence community, it expressly says the Central Intelligence Agency shall have no authority in the United States and shall gather no intelligence from anywhere in the United States. Well, when David Petraeus was the head of the CIA, he gave a speech that he thought was secret. One of the CIA agents recorded it, and then the word got out. And in that speech, he said, guess what? We can attach our microwaves to every computer chip in your house. So we know when you're using your microwave and your dishwasher. Well, now, why the heck would the CIA need to know that? Right. That's not the point. The point is, why are they making experiments on what they can do in our homes? They're not allowed to do anything in the United States. The CIA is physically present in every one of the 50 state houses in the state capitals in the United States, even though their charter expressly forbids that. What are they doing there? They're spying.
How do you know that?
I know that from governors who have told me.
Wow.
That they are aware of the presence of the CIA. And they had conversations. I don't want to tell you who these governors are. Neither of them is a governor anymore. And they had conversations with these folks who basically said, I'm just telling you who I am. You can kick me out, and my successor will be here, and he or she won't tell you who he or she is.
Wow. How many of the members of Congress or the Senate or in our state legislatures or our governors, lieutenant governors, secretary of states, attorney generals, how many of these people do you think have been developed and groomed and put where they are by the Central Intelligence Agency?
I think they've been developed and groomed and put where they are by the deep state, because it's not just the Central Intelligence Agency. The NSA, the National Security Agency, is five times the size of the CIA. The NSA has 60,000 domestic spies working for it. This is the group that Edward Snowden worked for. We wouldn't know any of this, that they capture every keystroke on every mobile device and every desktop. Even if you think you've deleted something, they have the record of it. The only reason we know this is because Snowden blew the whistle. They chased him to Hong Kong. They chased him to Moscow. The poor kid, he's got to spend the rest of his life in Moscow, of all places, because the feds have indicted him. But what he did was to perform a great service for us, because though the spies are still there, we now know they're there. And it doesn't change. It doesn't change. This is the group of people that tormented President Trump, the intelligence community. He did his best to resist him. They tried to get him thrown out of office. He triumphed over their efforts all the time. They intimidate members of Congress to vote the way they want the members of Congress to vote, because they know everything about them.
Well, you're saying exactly what many of us have thought and talked about openly on this broadcast and others. I don't know if you know that, I'm sure you do, Mike Lindell hosted a cyber symposium in August in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and we had members of the state legislatures from all over the country attend. That thing was infiltrated. I was there. Our broadcast team was there. Some of the guys in the control room were there. We saw it firsthand. There was a lot of things going on I don't want to talk about that we saw going on, but I can tell you firsthand, the intelligence community was all over that symposium. They did not that symposium.
The Supreme Court has a doctrine called chilling. Chilling occurs when the government engages in behavior that makes you think twice before you exercise your fundamental liberties. So if you're at a political rally and the guy next to you is an FBI agent, and the people on the other side of you are NSA agents, you're probably going to think twice before you say what you want to say. That's not America. The Supreme Court has condemned chilling. That is as destructive of freedom as if they made it unlawful for you to assemble at that political rally. Brennan, this week, the DOJ announced it's going to create a new division in there to look at domestic terrorism. What does that mean? That means that every conservative and every Republican and every libertarian rally in the country will be infiltrated by FBI agents.
Yeah.
Is that what we pay them to do?
No, it isn't. And we played that clip of the second in command, I guess, the Assistant Attorney General Olson was his last name. We played the clip of that. And I had last night I had on General Michael Flynn, who knew him and worked with him when he was DNI. And he was commenting on this. It's just super chilling. You don't know this, but I can forward some of them on to you. But in November 11th of 2021, I had four retired high-ranking FBI agents come to Memphis, Tennessee area where we're headquartered here. And one of them is a dear friend of mine now. He's become a dear friend over the last couple of years. His name is Terry Turchi. Terry Turchi is the former assistant deputy director of the counterterrorism division of the FBI. He was one of the three guys that was there the day they arrested the Unabomber. Terry has written a book, a judge, called In Their Own Words, subtitled The Democratic Party's Push Toward a Communist America. He goes into the history of the Weather Underground and how this ideology now has been dominating the Democrat Party, which is now dominating the Justice Department, which has now dominated the FBI and taken over its political independence. And again, this is the former assistant deputy director of the counterterrorism division of the FBI. His book is called In Their Own Words. It's fabulous.
I don't know the book, but I'm going to guess that what's in that book, Brennan, is the tip of the iceberg.
Yes. And he's working on a second book, and he introduced me to two other agents, former FBI just retired. One of them I knew before him. And the four of these guys, Judge, came to the Memphis, Tennessee area November 11th. We filmed 4 one-hour town hall meetings in front of a live audience. And these guys spilled their guts about what's happened to the FBI. One of them, Brian, he actually got choked up because he was not only in the FBI, his whole case was the Arthur Midland Daniels Corporation case. He was the agent on that. But he was also a SWAT team member. And I asked him about what they've been doing, knocking down doors of nonviolent people. And he brought up my friend Roger Stone, and he said, we would have never done that. And never would we have done that with the CNN in tow. And he got choked up. And all of these guys, including the former deputy assistant director of the counterterrorism division of the FBI, Terry Turchi, said, we are no longer under the rule of law. We are no longer under the rule of law. And people told me this was historic. Never have agents of this high caliber that have retired come forward together to warn. Now we have more retired high-ranking guys in the last few days have come forward and said, we watch those. We want to come forward and have you interview us. We're ready to spill our guts. The point I'm making is, isn't it time for guys to come out?
You're right. 2 weeks ago, four retired FBI agents revealed that the FBI had infiltrated the rioters in Portland, Oregon in the fall of 2020. 200 people were arrested by local police and by the feds there. The next day, 100 were let go. Who do you think those 100 were that were let go?
Wow.
FBI agents and informants working for FBI agents. When these guys got out of the FBI, they spill their guts because they are disgusted as to what happened to it.
Absolutely.
Listen, in my career on the bench, I was a state judge, but I tried many cases involving FBI agents. I met FBI agents in whose hands I would entrust my life and in whose hands I would entrust the Constitution for safekeeping. But that's your grandfather's FBI.
Right.
That's not the FBI of today.
Absolutely. Well, let's go back to the screenshot in our closing minutes here. Again, these articles are all at Judge Knapp, judgenap.com, as you see on the screen there. Here, the deep state and its tentacles. You wrote this one December 29th. Is this involving some of the things we've been talking about here, Judge?
Yes. The story that I just told you about the FBI, the ex-FBI agents coming clean about what happened in Portland, Oregon, is recounted in that. I don't know if you saw the clip of Ted Cruz interrogating.
We played it tonight in my news show.
Listen, Cruz has got a lot of political baggage, and he and I have been friends for years, and I bust his chops all the time. But that cross-examination was brilliant. I wish he didn't let her off the hook.
Right.
We have the right to know how many FBI agents were there on January 6th encouraging, how many FBI agents committed crimes and weren't prosecuted. When they infiltrate a crowd, they have to be credible. If they don't get their hands dirty, the crowd will know that they're the infiltrators.
Judge, did you ever think you'd see what we're going through in America today? Did you ever think this would happen?
No. And on my podcast today, I was talking to two wonderful libertarian friends, Jeff Deist, who's the president of the Mises Institute, and Tom Woods, who's one of the most brilliant independent scholars I know. They're both serious libertarians and longtime friends of mine. And we talked about how much longer the country can stay as a country.
Hmm.
Pretty soon, the feds won't be able to pay their bills, and nobody will accept their fiat money. and their employees will leave them and the military will leave them. It will collapse like an overripe apple the way the Soviet Union did. And then what happens?
And isn't that what Khrushchev said? You will fall over into our hands like overripe fruit.
Yes.
And now we see Russia, you know, and China parking sometimes ships in Cuba. We see China and Russia and Iran and Hezbollah and Venezuela. We see China is all over South America. I mean, they're all around us. I have people on there, experts in communism, and have been for decades saying the American people are naive to think that these people aren't interested in our land.
We have the worst possible administration as the head of the executive branch at the worst possible time. There's so much danger out there. You just put your finger on so much of it. And they're concerned with suppressing the free speech and association rights of ordinary Americans rather than protecting us from the dangers that are outside the border.
We had an OBGYN on Mike Lindell's report tonight, and he said, I think we're reaching the point where it's time for a national divorce. He said, I would rather see a national divorce than to see a civil war. And I say to people all the time, nobody should want a civil war. That would be horrible for our country. But his premise is we need a national divorce so we don't have a civil war. Is this possible? How did we get here? You're the expert. You're the constitutional expert. But weren't the 10 Bill of Rights to be 10 handcuffs onto the central government? And when did those handcuffs come off and get put onto the states instead of being the 10 handcuffs onto the central government? How did we get this way? Because they couldn't even ratify the Constitution until they got those 10 Bill of Rights, correct?
Correct. Correct. You're exactly right. Not enough states would have ratified the Constitution without the promise of the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights originally restrained only the federal government. When the 14th Amendment was ratified, so that's 1868, 3 years after the end of the Civil War, it's ratified with a gun to the head of the Southern legislatures, to which the federal government said, if you don't ratify the 14th Amendment, we're going to keep the troops in the streets. Remember, the federal troops were in the streets of the Southern states during what they euphemistically called Reconstruction. It was really a military dictatorship. And they were there until 1876, 11 years after the war was over. The 14th Amendment has been interpreted to apply the restraints of the Bill of Rights to the states. I am glad it's been interpreted that way. The state, look at the state I live in, New Jersey. The states can be as tyrannical as the federal government. But you put your finger on it, Brandon, when you said, when the handcuffs went on the states to restrain them from interfering with liberty, the handcuffs came off the feds, and they got away with interfering with personal liberty.
So
that's,
how do we get out of this?
A terrible danger.
How do we get out of this? What's the solution, Judge?
Well, there's a sort of soft nullification going on. Now, nullification was a theory espoused by James Madison, who wrote the Constitution, and Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence. Pretty good credentials when the Alien and Sedition Acts were written in 1798, which allowed the federal government to prosecute people who criticized the government, notwithstanding the First Amendment. Madison wrote the Kentucky Resolutions and Jefferson the Virginia Resolutions. The legislature of Kentucky, the legislature of Virginia, nullified the Alien and Sedition Acts and said these acts don't apply in our states. Fast forward to today. Abortion. The state of Texas just nullified Roe versus Wade. Thanks be to God. And the Supreme Court said, you can do it.
Wow.
This is the first time the court has permitted nullification since the 1830s.
Wow.
So there's a glimmer of hope with, when I say soft, I mean nonviolent, soft nullification, soft secession, soft thumbing your nose at the federal government. We're beginning to see a little bit of that. And once the Supreme Court let Texas get away with it, I think you're going to see Florida, South Dakota, and Mississippi follow suit.
Excellent. All right, Judge, I'm going to order up some of your books, and I'm going to have you back on, and you keep writing the articles. I'll order up some of your books. I want to get you back on and go through some of your books you've written. because I love interviewing people about their books, because we can get right to the meat of what they're about. And in the meantime, I hope people will visit Judge Knapp, Judge, and then A-N-A-P, like Judge Napolitano, folks, but it's shortened for all of us, judgenapp.com. Right. I hope a lot of folks will visit that. They'll find your podcast. You mentioned your podcast, Judge. Is that where they'll find it as well?
Yes, they'll find it there. It's probably easier to go to Judging Freedom, which is the name of the podcast, on YouTube, but you can get it through Judge Knapp as well. Okay. Judge Knapp has everything, including all of the columns which come out on Thursday. I'm going to start sending you those columns before they come out, so if you want, you and I can talk about them while they're hot.
Absolutely. I like to interview. I just text with Michelle Malkin about getting her back on. I have a lot of folks that crank out those columns, and I love interviewing them about them. So absolutely do that, and you can get my direct email or text number from Logan when we take a break here. But let's have you back on regularly. We'd love to have you as a regular here on Lindell TV.
Thank you so much, Brandon. It's a pleasure. All the best to you.
You too, Judge. Talk to you soon. Judge Napolitano checking in. Again, I hope you'll check out his website, judgenapp.com. Great interview. You would have think we'd been buddies for years. Back and forth. That's because we're studying the same things, folks. That's why it's so easy to interview people that are knowledgeable, that are historians. Those kind of people are fun to interview. That was a very natural interview, wasn't it? And you know why? I just answered it. Because we're studying the same things and we have a love of the same things when it comes to freedom, liberty, limited government, freedom. And so I look forward to having the judge back on. In the meantime, I hope you'll check out his website, judgenapp.com.